2016, in Durban, South Africa, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, Text 31.
Indriyani dashabhavan, jnana shakti kriya shakti, Buddhi pranas chatai jasau, Sotram twa grana jig jiva, Bhaktor me grangri payava. Tai jasat. By the passionate egoism. Two. But. Bikurvanat. Transformation of. Indriyani, the senses, dasha, ten, abhavan, generated, jnana-shakti, the five senses for acquiring knowledge, kriya-shakti, the five senses of activities, buddhi, intelligence, prana, the living energy, cha, also, tejaso, all products of the mode of passion, srotram, the sense for hearing, tvak, the sense for touching, grana, the sense for smelling, drik, the sense for seeing, jiva, the sense for tasting, vak, the sense for speaking, do, the sense for handling, medra, the genitals, angri, the legs, payavaha, the sense for evacuating. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ears, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. Purport. The living condition in material existence depends more or less on one's intelligence and powerful living energy. Intelligence to counteract the hard struggle for existence is assisted by the senses for acquiring knowledge, and the living energy maintains himself by manipulating the active organs like the hands and legs. But on the whole, the struggle for existence is an exertion of the mode of passion. Therefore, all the sense organs headed by intelligence and the living energy, prana, are different products and byproducts of the second mode of nature called passion. This mode of passion, however, is the product of the air element as described before. Tai jasattu vikurvanad indriyani jasabhavan jnana shakti kriya shaktir buddhir pranas tatai jaso strotam twa grina trigjiva vagdor med grang bipayavaha. By further transformation of the mode of passion, the sense organs like the ear, skin, nose, eyes, tongue, mouth, hands, genitals, legs, and the outlet for evacuating, together with intelligence and living energy, are all generated. So here the Bhagavatam, talking about the creation, says the mode of passion creates intelligence, and the intelligence works through the knowledge acquiring senses, being able to hear, smell, see, touch, etc., taste, and then the prana, the life energy, which is also generated from the mode of passion, is active through the active senses, the hands, the legs, genitals, anus, etc. And in this way, Prabhupada says, we counteract the hard struggle for existence by using our knowledge-acquiring senses with our intelligence and using our active senses with our prana. But he says all of this is just simply a product of the mode of passion. So why is it important to understand the mode of passion? Well, Srila Prabhupada writes in 1.6.21 that devotional service begins when we are free from the modes of passion and ignorance. He says this will be demonstrated by a freedom from lust and greed. It's interesting that Krishna both says that we conquer the modes of nature by full engagement in devotional service, And he also says that we can't engage in devotional service until we've conquered the modes of material nature. So it's sort of interesting, right? Nam ceo vyavicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samantichaitam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Says the way you conquer, the method for conquering the modes of nature, including the mode of goodness, is devotional service. Right? But then we also have brahma bhuta prasanatmana sochajina kanchati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhakti mavate param. It's only when you come to brahma bhuta, it's only when you're above the modes of nature, that you actually engage in devotional service. So one way of understanding this is with the progressive march from Shraddha to Prema that Rupa Goswami gives in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and of course Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elucidates very clearly in the Madhurya Kadambini. I'm noticing Arjuna Tripura with this microphone. If I turn this way, it's loud, and if I turn this way, it's not. Is this also a unidirectional microphone? No. So it only really picks me up if I turn to my right. I mean, we could try having it right here. I'm going to try that. Is that better? Is that better? So one way, again, we can understand this is talking about Shraddha to Prema. And in the middle place, at Nishta, or being fixed, Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Seveya Bhagavati Uttama Slokir Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki, is at that point the modes of passion and ignorance are not very effective in the devotee's life. And according to Madhurya Kadambini, that's the place at which the mode of goodness is at about 40 to 50%. And there's other places where Prabhupada will use 50. Sometimes he says 75, but generally he says 50. When you're 50% free, I should feel when you're 50% free of passion and ignorance, then you become fixed in bhakti. So this getting rid of the mode of passion and ignorance influence in our lives, because at Nishta, even though there's still 50% of passion and ignorance, one is not very affected by it. One can see it and one does not usually act on it. So we need to understand what these modes are. I've always found it fascinating that in the beginning of the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, now I'm going to teach you something better than what I've taught you before. When devotional service is explained in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and the 14th chapter is about the modes of material nature. So why is this such an important topic? Because one has to know, as the Isha Upanishad says, vidya and avidya, sambhutim and asambhutim. One has to know both transcendence and illusion side by side. If one only knows transcendence, one may make mistakes. The Sahajiya group is a good example of this kind of mistake, where they have some idea of the transcendence. They have some idea they're supposed to have a relationship with Krishna, but they can't recognize illusion. They haven't studied illusion, and therefore they can't sort out what part is their relationship with Krishna and what part is illusion. And of course, if all you know is illusion, then you don't achieve any kind of transcendence at all. The smartas are a good example of this, that all they are is in the rituals, right? They really don't have any kind of understanding of transcendence. So here we're going to look particularly at... just keeps shedding and shedding and shedding. Here we're going to look particularly at the mode of passion. So I thought it would be good to understand what is the mode of passion. I mean, this verse is talking about what's the creation of the mode of passion. What is passion itself? How does it entangle us, and how should we deal with it? So what is the mode of passion? It's the basic element of, as Prabhupada says, the hard struggle with material nature. It's sort of the essence of that. In the mode of ignorance, you try to become the master of material nature by doing only what comes very easily. You know, you get whatever food and money and whatever comes easily, and you don't really care if you do that in a pious or impious way. You know, you want fast food, never mind that it has no nutrition in it and it's going to make you sick. You know, just something that's easy. You want to get crops quickly, so you just pollute the earth. Right? You want to slaughter your animals quickly, so you pump them up full of all kinds of chemicals and things like that. So this is very much the mode of ignorance. And the mode of goodness, you're trying to conquer the material energy by becoming in balance with the material energy. It's still a kind of conquering, because there's still ego in the mode of goodness. But it's much more a conquering by surrender than a conquering by conquering. Can you follow that logic? It's just like Prabhupada says that the good wife conquers her husband by her submissive attitude. So the man becomes conquered, but he becomes conquered because she submits, not because she's, you know, overrides him. So the mode of goodness is something like that. One submits to nature, one submits to the harmony in the universe, and that way one becomes happy in the world. And the mode of ignorance, you kind of let the mode just conquer you, and you just sort of go with whatever happens. But in the mode of passion, you're trying to change things. You're trying to mold the material world to be the way that you want it. Can you understand the difference between all three? So the mode, in all three, you're trying to be the master of the material energy. But the mode of ignorance is like, okay, whatever sort of comes at me, I'll just grab that. You know, in whatever way, without thinking about consequence. And the mode of goodness, you're just, I'm actually going to be in balance. I'm only going to do what's right. I'm only going to do what's proper. I'm not going to take more than my share. And I'm not going to do anything that requires any kind of sinful activity. Whatever comes to me easily, if it's good. The mode of ignorance is whatever comes to me easily, whether it's good or bad, I don't really care. And the mode of goodness is whatever comes naturally, if it's a good thing. I will not do the bad things. And the mode of passion is I'm going to take things into my own hands. You know, I'm willing to have great endeavor to try to have things the way that I want. Now, endurance and determination are the strongest in the mode of goodness because it's not affected by success or failure, happiness or distress. Whereas in the mode of passion, one's determination is very much affected by the results one thinks one's going to get because it's all about manipulating the world to get a certain result. I want a particular result and I will work to get that result. By the way, very few people are fully in the mode of ignorance. Most people, even in the mode of ignorance, have some passion in them. They're trying to work for some kind of a result. And what's giving you the determination is whether or not you feel you can get the result. If it looks like you can't get the result, then you stop. Right? Your determination is finished, whereas in the mode of goodness, your determination doesn't waver in success or failure. So it's all about the fruit. It's all about the result in the mode of passion. And what that basically means is most of your life, you're not experiencing anything we could call happiness. I mean, the mode of ignorance, you don't experience any kind of joy whatsoever. You have some sort of ego satisfaction of, you know, I break the rules and I get away with it. You know, there's something like that. The satisfaction of sleep or the satisfaction of intoxication, the satisfaction of, you know, numbing your mind with entertainment. But it's not really anything you could call joy. And the mode of passion, you get some pleasure from the sense objects, but it's only periodic. So you're working for your fruit, and then you get your fruit, and you enjoy it. And then that enjoyment is over, and then you work again for another fruit. So the vast majority of the time, you're working, and occasionally, you have a fruit of enjoyment which you've earned by your work. Now, of course, sometimes that fruit you earn by your work isn't tasty. You know, you work hard for something, and you get it, and then you're like, ugh. Like someone gave me an orange yesterday that was salted. My God. And so often our material fruits are like that. You know, we work really hard for something and you get it. And when you get it, you say, I didn't even want this. It wasn't what I wanted. You work hard for a career. One devotee I know worked very hard to be a lawyer. And after being a lawyer for a few years, she decided, I don't like being a lawyer. So that's, you know, the fruit may be bitter. Or someone else takes your fruit. You work hard for the fruit and someone else steals it. The birds eat it and you don't even get it. And of course, even while you're enjoying the fruit, you're usually just thinking about the next fruit. You're thinking about when that fruit's going to go away. You're thinking about the next fruit. So even when you're enjoying the fruit, it's not unmitigated enjoyment. But the person in the mode of passion is willing to work hard and long and according to moral principles in order to gain some kind of fruit. And as we talked about yesterday, the main essence of material enjoyment, which is pleasing sense objects and ego boosts, is what the mode of passion person is looking for. They're looking for materialistic enjoyment. They're looking for something that, you know, something nice to see, something nice to hear, something nice to taste. Here we see all the senses are products of the mode of passion. And they're also looking for something for their ego. Now, what also differentiates the mode of passion from the mode of ignorance is that generally people in the mode of passion, not always, but generally people in the mode of passion want to achieve these things through Dharma. The epitome of the mode of passion, which is called Rajagun, is a Raja. What is a Raja? A king. Now that doesn't mean, you know, modern kings or like medieval European kings. But it means the kind of kings that we read about maybe in the fairy tales or that you read about in the old descriptions of history in the Bhagavatam. People who really fought for righteousness. Sort of the myth of the perfect, righteous, noble rulers. So that's the person who's in the mode of passion. They're willing to ride out on the battlefield and sacrifice their life for a just cause. They protect the innocent and so forth and so on. So that's really epitomizes the mode of passion. And the mode of passion is very concerned. A lot of devotees think that charity is primarily the domain of goodness, but it's not. Charity is primarily the domain of passion. Mode of passion, you want to improve the world. You're trying to control and manipulate the world. I mean, like, what's his name? Bill Gates. He said, I don't go to church on Sunday because I can do much more good for the world by giving charity than I can by praying to God. So that's a very typical mentality of somebody in the mode of passion. I'm going to change the world. You know, the king and queen, they're trying to change the world by giving everybody water and food and schools and hospitals and parks. Yes? Taking care of the poor and the widow and the orphans. And if some other kingdom isn't run properly, they'll go in and conquer it and take it over themselves. The concern of... whenever we're inclined to transgress the boundaries of our service and take over someone else's service because it's not done properly, it's that kind of mood. That we're like this passionate king that wants to conquer another kingdom. You know, in Vedic times, you're only allowed to conquer another kingdom if that kingdom wasn't ruled properly, because you could conquer another kingdom to protect the citizens. Just like when Bhima killed Jarasandhar, Krishna didn't take over the kingdom, but he handed it to Jarasandhar's son, Sahadev. Because Krishna's purpose wasn't to take over the kingdom for himself, but to put a good ruler in charge. But if there's no good ruler in charge, then the Kshatriya takes over that kingdom. So, of course, it's the government that's collecting a lot of taxes and can give lavishly in charity. The same is true for the higher level vaishyas. Vaishyas are a mixture of passion and ignorance. So the higher level vaishyas, the big wealthy business persons. So they're also giving profuse charity and trying to establish the arts also for society. They become the patron of the arts. Prabhupada says the inclination for philosophy, art, and culture in human society is primarily the mode of passion. So it's like we've come here and we're going to improve on it. The person in the mode of goodness isn't trying to improve on the world. The person in the mode of goodness is trying to simply be in harmony with the best element of the world, with the truth of the world. The person in the mode of ignorance doesn't really care about anything other than their immediate sense pleasure. And the person in the mode of passion is caring about, I want to help others. I want to take care of the good of the world. I want to be the doer. I want to be the maker. I want to be the achiever. And of course, everybody, almost everybody, has some action of the mode of passion, usually between the ages like 15 to 50, which is when people in the ashram system get married and have an occupation. They're doing something to improve the world through their occupation. They're doing something to make a living. They're producing children, having a sexual relationship. So this is all manifestation of the mode of passion, even if you're generally in the mode of ignorance or you're generally in the mode of goodness. That's some influence there of the mode of passion. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the mode of passion looks like nectar at the beginning, but is poison at the end. Because the kind of happiness one is getting in passion is not satisfying. The kind of happiness you're getting in passion is just for the senses and the ego. The mind is not peaceful. We talked yesterday how the mode of goodness is necessary for a peaceful mind. But the mode of passion, the mind is not peaceful. And Krishna says there cannot be any happiness without peace. In the mode of passion, you're always anxiety about the result. Will I get the result? Will I not get the result? I better do this. I better do that. I better take care of this. I better take care of that. What about this? 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 And while you're enjoying the fruit, you're thinking, how long is this fruit going to last? What's my next fruit? You know, so constantly anxiety, and all of the things that one enjoys are temporary. One's enjoying things, you know, the pizza's going to be eaten. The beautiful woman's going to get old. The money's going to be taken by a devaluation of the currency, you know, or something, you know. You understand? Or I'm going to die and I'm going to lose all this. It's all temporary. So one's always in anxiety because of that. Dukkhalayam shashvatam. Anitya asukha. One's also always in anxiety because those kinds of pleasures don't touch the soul. They're not real pleasures. There's something like you polish your car and you put fuel into your car, but that doesn't make your body clean or your body nourished. So when we give sense pleasure to the physical body and when we give ego pleasure to the subtle body, none of that touches the soul. None of it is genuine. So I give the example many times that many years ago on a fast day I took a little nap, and in my nap I was eating a big feast. And I was also drinking water. So first I was had cups of water in my dream, and I was drinking cup after cup. And cup and cup and cup. And finally in my dream I got a huge gallon jug, like 4-liter jug of water, and I was drinking the whole jug. At a certain point in my dream, I thought, there's something wrong here. How can I be drinking all this water and still be thirsty? And then I woke up and understood, oh, I was drinking dream water. So all of the happiness in the mode of passion is exactly like that. It's compared to a dream, swapna. It doesn't have any sustenance. Or you could talk about, in modern times, Sataputabhu, my godbrother, used to talk about computer games and virtual reality. So someone's playing a computer game and their character in the game wins gold and, you know, finds a romantic partner and kills the demons. But you're just a shrimp in your chair, you know. You don't have anything. Your character's won all this gold, but your bank account's empty and they're fighting the demons and, you know, you can't even fight your own mind. And they have a romantic partner and you're alone just eating chips. So this is really the essence of happiness in the mode of passion. I like to think of it as a photograph. It's like you take a photograph. Here I am with my happy family, my beautiful house, my car, my dog. You know, here I am. I am happy. But it's just, as Krishna says, mental concoction. It's an illusion of happiness. So it's poison at the end. Because people who achieve great things in the mode of passion inevitably say, is that all there is? You know, inevitably. When the press interviews people who are very successful in the mode of passion, very rich, very famous, beautiful, and so forth, they'll inevitably say, I got what I wanted, but I'm not satisfied. I got what I wanted, but I'm not satisfied. My life is empty. I was reading an interview like that recently with some big person. He said, you know, I fulfilled all of my dreams, but I'm heartbroken. My life is empty. Because that doesn't have anything to do with the self at all. So that's what the mode of passion is. Of course, we go through a detailed description of the mode of passion. If we look at the 17th and 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes all kinds of things in the mode of passion. Like, what does Krishna describe about food in the mode of passion? Anybody know?
Pungent.
Spicy. Pungent, spicy, same thing.
Salty.
Dry. Is it also dry? Hot, spicy, pungent. Basically, it's too much. Food in the mode of passion is too much. Too much salt. Too much spicy. Too much sugar. Too much oil. You know, too much quantity. It's just too much, too much, too much. And it makes you feel lousy after you eat it. You know, you feel tired or you feel like there's a rock in your stomach. That's food in the mode of passion. What about charity in the mode of passion? Anybody know about charity in the mode of passion? Excuse me? You're trying to get a name for yourself, yes. Which I must say, we encourage charity in the mode of passion in the Hare Krishna movement a lot. Many years ago, I was doing a study of fundraising, and the books I read were all secular, with one exception. I read a Christian book on charity giving, Christian, Jewish maybe also. It was called Growing Givers' Hearts, and it was a qualitative study of Christian and maybe also Jewish religious groups where the process of asking for charity was in accord with scriptural principles. You know, often we think that the mode of nature of charity or transcendence of charity is what the money is used for. That's not true. Actually, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami makes the point that you cannot perform bhakti through charity or through disciples. So if a guru has disciples and the disciples do some service, that's the disciple service, it's not the guru service. If I give you money and you do service with that money, the service you do with that money is yours, not mine. My service was giving you the money. Your service is what you do with the money. So my service may be helping someone in Krishna consciousness. What they do is their service. So it's not that that the mode of nature depends on what people do with the money. Of course, one should be careful about to whom one gives money. We shouldn't give money to people who we know are going to misuse it. But what are some more things about charity and mode of passion? So one, it's done for name and fame. It's done so we get a plaque up. You know, and in some temples, you have your plaques way off in the background. But in some temples, in the temple room, the plaques are very dominant. And I know of one temple, you're not going to believe this, but it is true, where the altar is made out of donation plaques. Really, no joke. Like, you know, your altar's made out of marble. So imagine if instead it was made out of brass donation plaques. What else characterizes charity in the mode of passion? Sort of. Charity in the mode of ignorance is outward grudgingly. So charity in the mode of ignorance is like, here, all right, take it. So even if you give to a good person at the right time in the right place, if you do it without respect, that's in the mode of ignorance. Now, in the mode of passion, it's grudgingly internally. So I'm saying, here, take it. I really didn't want to do this. Here, this. And Prabhupada talks about in the purport, and please listen to this very carefully, the charity in the mode of passion is given out of obligation or at the request of a superior, or with regret later. And I think in ISKCON, we encourage charity in the mode of passion all the time. First of all, we encourage people to give charity for name and fame. And second of all, we tell people that they have to do this or have to do that because their superior tells them to. By the way, charity is not just money. Charity is also your time, right? If you make 100 rands an hour and you give an hour of your time, that's the same as giving 100 rands. Makes sense? Right? Or if I give some object that I've purchased or whatever. And we often encourage people to volunteer their time and give something out of some sort of, you know, you really should do it. You should, you should, you should, you should, you should. And later the person regrets and says, you know, wow, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I had done something else with my life. Huh?
Christianity according to lip service.
In Christianity they call it lip service, yes. So that's all charity in the mode of passion. But charity in the mode of passion is given to the right person at the right time and in the right place. If you have the wrong time, wrong place, wrong person, then it shifts down to the mode of ignorance. So you're giving charity to the right, your externals are right, but your internals are wrong. Anybody know about understanding in the mode of passion? This is one of the most important areas to know in the modes, understanding. So understanding in the mode of ignorance, you think religion is irreligion and irreligion is religion. You think it's religious to eat meat, you think it's irreligious to worship the deities. You have it backwards. In passion, you're mixed up. You know, you're mixed up. You think, oh, we shouldn't give the death penalty to murderers, but we should abort babies in the womb. You know, you don't really understand things. And sometimes you get it right in the mode of passion. I mean, sometimes in the mode of passion you really get something right, and sometimes you really get it wrong. It's very mixed. In the mode of goodness, you always get it right. In the mode of goodness, you always know what to do and what not to do, what's binding, what's liberating, what's good, what's bad. In other words, in the mode of goodness, you consistently make the proper decisions. In fact, whenever we're not sure of what to do, get in goodness. And we talked about yesterday where Prabhupada said, if you're agitated, just sit down and chant so that the sediment settles in the pond. So whenever, you know, people often come to a senior devotee, should I do this, 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 and this? I have these five choices. Usually they think there's only two, of course. I have these only two choices, which is never the case. What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And the response is always, first, fix your mind. First, calm your mind. First, get your mind clear. First, get your mind in the mode of goodness. Then you will probably see what to do and you won't have to ask anybody. But the mode of passion, if our life is a real mixture of good and bad decisions, then that's indicative of the mode of passion. If our life is almost entirely bad decisions, then that's an indication of the mode of ignorance. What about knowledge? What's knowledge in the modes? What's in the mode of passion? Knowledge. So you see everyone is their body. These are the men, these are the women. You know, there's a black, there's an Indian, there's a color, then a white. South Africa really has this history of mode of passion knowledge here. By the way, it's not like that all over the world, if you've never left South Africa. That very heavy racial mentality doesn't exist in most other places. In Brazil, it doesn't exist at all. People have no concept of race in Brazil whatsoever. They just don't think like that, which is... In America, we certainly have some, though not as much as you have here. But it was sort of jolting to be in a country where they didn't have any racial filter whatsoever. You know, or that's a dog, that's a cow. Just seeing that that's what they are. This is a cow. You know, this is an Indian woman. That's what they are. So that's knowledge in the mode of passion. In the mode of goodness, you see the soul. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hasne sunicharas pakeja. Pandita Samadarshi. Huh? You don't see according to the body, you see the soul. Of course, that doesn't mean you invite an elephant to eat at your dinner table. But you just see the soul. And the mode of passion, in the mode of ignorance, you don't even think about these things. The mode of ignorance, all you think about is get up, I go to work, watch the football game, drink some beer, have some sex, go to bed. So that's knowledge in the mode of ignorance. You don't even think about philosophical things. And we already talked a little bit about determination. That determination in the mode of passion is when you see a good result for yourself, some good sense gratification result, and if you don't see a good result, you're not determined anymore. Mode of ignorance, your determination is just hoping and dreaming, maybe someday I'll do this. And the mode of goodness is absolutely firm determination that's not affected by anything external that's fixed in yoga practice. What's the destination of someone who dies in the mode of passion? Comes back to what kind of body? Huh? Yeah, but where in the material world? Material world is a big place. Huh?
Human form.
In the human form, yes. The human form is primarily the mode of passion. And Prabhupada said, if you're purely in the mode of passion, then you come as a very rich person, as a very big king, very big business person, somebody with a lot of power and money. So if you die very strongly in the mode of passion, then you get a very opulent human birth. But all human births are more or less in the mode of passion. The human body itself is primarily in the mode of passion. Most religion in the world today is in the mode of passion, the vast majority of religion, which is basically worship God so that you can get sense pleasure and praise. Be a good person in the world, follow dharma, follow the rules so that you can enjoy the world by the grace of God. Am I correct? That's most religion in the world. They may teach a little bit of the mode of goodness of, you know, practice forgiveness and tolerance just so you'll feel peaceful inside. But if you're practicing forgiveness and tolerance so people will say, how forgiving you are, that's very much in the mode of passion. You know, if you're giving charity because you know that that's going to make you rich, did you know that's the main way to get rich? Is to give in charity. I'm not kidding, really, not kidding. That's the main way to get wealthy, is to give in charity. So if you're giving in charity to become rich, then that's the mode of passion also. So if religions say, give in charity and this way you'll become prosperous, then there's a religion in Rajagun. If people say, give in charity so you'll be in harmony with the universe and you'll be less selfless and you'll be peaceful, that's in the mode of goodness. So how does the mode of passion entangle us? Well, it entangles us because we become very disappointed. And we have we take birth over and over again if we're in the mode of passion. And we don't really have higher knowledge. We don't get out of seeing things materially. Our religion in the mode of passion is not transcendent at all. Also, religion in the mode of passion is very sectarian. This is my religion, this is your religion, kind of thing. We don't see things in a transcendent way. And it fills one with lust, not just sexual lust, but in general, wanting more and more and more and more things in the world. The mode of passion is particularly epitomized by more, bigger, better, more, bigger, better, more, bigger, better. We have a very much mode of passion society. How many sets of clothes do we need? How many flat screen TVs do you need in your house? How many cars do you need in your garage? It's just more and more. So it inflames lust and greediness in the heart. Why? Because the happiness in the mode of passion is coming from the external sense objects, right? And from that ego boost. And remember we talked about yesterday how that gets boring? You get accustomed to it. Like most of you don't even notice how beautiful the temple room is anymore. Because sensory input gets boring. It becomes in the background. And after a while, it becomes even repulsive. If you ate pizza for breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast, lunch, after a while, you'd see pizza and you'd want to vomit. Don't give me any more pizza. Right? So in the mode of passion, because your happiness is dependent on these things, there's a constant push for more variety and a constant push for more and newer and bigger and better, because that's the only way you get a kick out of it anymore. You follow? In the mode of goodness, the kick you're getting is in your own heart. You're getting your happiness. Did I just knock this out totally? I think I just knocked out this mic. I just touched it. And it's gone. It doesn't love me anymore. Okay, we have our backup system. Look at that. But this is also unidirectional. Okay. All right, look at that. Nothing like a backup system. So in the mode of goodness, your happiness is coming from within. It's not dependent on these things. So in the mode of goodness, you don't care about getting more, bigger, better, more, bigger, better, more, bigger, better. You've already got everything you need internally. And in the mode of ignorance, you don't get the more, bigger, better because you're just too lazy. You'd like the more, bigger, better in the mode of ignorance, but only if you win it in the lottery or something. You're not going to work hard for it. You're just going to dream about it. And maybe you'll steal it. Right? Find somebody else who's got the more, bigger, better and just take it away from them. So that's the mode of ignorance idea. But mode of passion, you're willing to work for it. So there's a lot of lust and dissatisfaction in the mode of passion. You're really never satisfied. You're trying to get something that doesn't give satisfaction, and you're trying to get more and more and more of it. Now, the other thing to understand about the mode of passion is you're in the middle. As Prabhupada says in this purport, it's the second of the modes. You're in the middle. The activities of those in the mode of passion often resemble those in the mode of goodness, because both those in the mode of goodness and those in the mode of passion want to do dharmic activities. The mode of goodness people want to do dharmic activities so they feel all peaceful and fuzzy and happy and balanced inside. And the mode of passion people want to do dharmic activities because they understand that's the best way to get the more, bigger, better. But they're both doing dharmic activities. However, because the person in the mode of passion wants external happiness, whereas the person in the mode of goodness has internal happiness, if external happiness is not available through dharma, a mode of passion person may be tempted to get it through adharma and thus go down to the mode of ignorance. So as long as the person in the mode of passion is dependent on happiness from external sense objects and from ego boosts, they may not be willing to be satisfied with what comes their way through dharmic endeavor. We're pleasure-seeking by nature, and if you do a dharmic endeavor and you don't get your sense and ego happiness, you may resort to an adharmic endeavor. And that pushes you right over the cliff into the mode of ignorance. Now, on the positive side, because you're doing dharmic endeavors, you may end up getting some inner satisfaction from those dharmic endeavors, because dharmic endeavors give inner satisfaction. And if you experience that inner satisfaction, you may pop up to the mode of goodness and say, wow, this is a lot better than what I have. So the mode of passion has the ability to evolve to the mode of goodness because of the dharmic activities they're doing, which may bring them that inner satisfaction, which may incline them to go for that. Or the mode of passion people may devolve to the mode of ignorance if they feel that they can't get their sensory activities in a righteous way. Any time that we resort to improper means to get something because we feel we want it badly enough that we're not willing to forego it if it doesn't come through dharma, then we are acting in the mode of ignorance. I really want this thing. I really, really want this thing. I'm doing dharma to get it, and it's not happening. Okay, let me resort to something adharmic to get it. Boom. Tamagun. And tamagun is very dangerous. Tamagun brings all the bad karma. Our disease, our poverty, our, you know, all this is coming from having something to do with tamagun, all of our material suffering. Okay, so we've looked at this thing completely from a materialistic point of view so far. So how will we as bhakti yogis, or in my case, an aspiring bhakti yogi, how are we going to deal with the mode of passion? Well, at the very least, we should go from passion to goodness. The very, very least thing we should do, as I quoted yesterday, Krishna says in the 11th canto, if you haven't yet realized yourself, then you should work in the mode of goodness. So the very, very least thing we should do is we should pop from passion to goodness. We should learn to find satisfaction within, and we should use dharma for finding that inner satisfaction and that inner balance. Why goodness? Because we have a really good chance in goodness of becoming awakened to self-realization. Just like you have a chance in passion of coming to goodness. You have a chance in goodness of coming to self-realization. You can also get stuck in goodness, as we talked about yesterday. You can become conditioned by the happiness you find in goodness and just kind of stay at that platform. So goodness has its... And you can have a pride about goodness also, which is an admixture of the mode of passion. I am so much more in balance and harmony than everybody else. Right? Like one of my devotee friends messaged me yesterday and she said, I'm struggling with elitism, thinking that I'm better than all those foolish people who voted for Donald Trump. So this is a kind of mode of passion that can affect people in the higher levels. They think, you know, I'm not like those low people. I am balanced and I am in equanimity. I've noticed, frankly, that the hardest people to preach Krishna consciousness to are often those in sattvagun. I don't know if you've had this experience. The people who are in the mode of goodness, the people who are into yoga and vegetarianism and ecology and simple living, are often the most difficult to bring to Krishna consciousness because they think, well, I'm already there. I am so peaceful and I'm blissful. I like your Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is wonderful, sure. Oh, yeah. I have my own Krishna consciousness. So I find they're often very difficult because they get conditioned by the sense of happiness. They get conditioned by the sense of equanimity. And unless they have an experience of bhakti, they don't see that the happiness they experience in goodness is so limited compared to the happiness of bhakti. So sattva has its dangers. It does, unquestionably. But that is at least as devotees, we should function in the mode of goodness. Our food, our behavior, our charity, our knowledge, our understanding, everything, we should pop it up to the mode of goodness. But better than that is really to transcend the mode of passion entirely and work on the platform of bhakti. And we were talking a little bit about this yesterday, how the idea of karma yoga is to give up the results of your work to anybody in charity and become peaceful that way. But the endeavor that we would normally make in the mode of passion, because I think we can say that every human being is affected by passion to some extent. It would be very, very difficult to have a human body and not have any influence of the mode of passion in the body and mind. That would be, we figure it's not going to happen. There's some mode of passion, as discussed in this verse and purport, that's part of our senses and part of our mind. So that desire to be creative, to be the doer, to be the builder, to use that to do something creative in doing and building for Krishna. And Prabhupada very much encouraged that. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada and Srila Bhakti Santa Sarasvati, they did not encourage the Bhajananandi or Babaji lifestyle in Bhakti Yoga, which is a bona fide Bhakti Yoga lifestyle. Now, Haridas Thakur was primarily living like that, although he also went out preaching with Lord Nityananda, which is interesting. He complained to Advaita Acharya about preaching with Lord Nityananda. He says, "You sent me out with a madman." Hare Krishna. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati and Srila Prabhupada, they both encouraged their followers to be active in the world, to be active as preachers in the world, not to be inactive. And that's using the same inclination that we would use. In fact, there's one very nice lecture where Prabhupada's talking about kama, and kama is very connected with the mode of passion. And he says, how do you conquer kama? Is you make plans for Krishna. Instead of making plans for your sense gratification, you make plans for preaching Krishna consciousness. He says, instead of building a big skyscraper for your family, you build a big temple. I mean, it's interesting because Rupa Goswami says, don't get into building big temples. And Prabhupada comments in the Nectar of Devotion, he says that really a devotee shouldn't bother about building a big temple unless a rich person comes forward and offers some money to do so. But he shouldn't canvass for building a big temple. But frankly, if we don't build big temples for Krishna, we'll build a big temple for our family. If we don't make some big plans to spread Krishna consciousness, we'll make some big plans to try to conquer the world in another way. So we have Srila Prabhupada and the principle of Yukta Vairagya use that creative and just passionate energy, that very creative, doing, busy energy in doing something wonderful for Lord Chaitanya's movement. And I know he said of the Americans, he said, if you don't do something wonderful for Krishna, what's the use of being Americans? Because there's that very much mode of passion. So that's one way that we can deal with the mode of passion. To take what we would have done anyway for our own sense gratification, what we would have done anyway to do bigger, better, bigger, better, bigger, better for our own name and fame, and do something bigger, better, bigger, better for Krishna. And then it acts like the iron rod in the fire. The activities that we do in purify us, just like doing the 64 hungers of bhakti, we do. But we give up the results of our work. We don't work for our own to enjoy the results. We work so Krishna will enjoy the results. On an even deeper internal psychological level, there's a very nice commentary in Bhagavatam 10.13.50, which was the last chapter in the Bhagavatam that Prabhupada translated before he departed from this world, and is based on a commentary of Sanatana Goswami, where it says that when the Lord appeared as multiple Vishnu forms, the cowherd boys and the cows that Lord Brahma had kidnapped were then duplicated by the Lord. You all know that story. And when Lord Brahma came, he first just saw this duplicate set, and then they all manifested as Vishnu. And then it says that all these Vishnu forms, they were glancing at all living entities with passion. But Sanatana Goswami explains, and Prabhupada explains also in his purport, that it wasn't the mode of passion, it was the origin of the mode of passion, which is affection. Now in this world, our affection is in the mode of passion. We're affectionate to people and places and things that we feel are going to satisfy our senses. And we don't feel affection for people, places, and things, activities that we don't think will satisfy our senses. We have an attraction, an aversion. If something will satisfy my senses or my ego, I feel affection towards it. That's not real affection. All I'm feeling affection towards is my own satisfaction. I'm not really feeling affection toward the other person, or toward the animal, or toward the thing. It's just simply that I care about my own satisfaction. So that's not actual affection. And that kind of affection we should be very detached from. I should be disgusted by it. this illusion of affection that's just my own selfishness. But the affection that the Lord feels is a genuine affection. He actually cares for the living entities. And the affection that a devotee who's free from the mode of passion feels for other devotees and for the Lord and for all the Lord's energy is also a genuine affection. So we really have to transform this mode of passion back to its original form, which is spiritual affection. How does one feel genuine spiritual affection? So let's just think a little bit about, again, how the modes work. In the mode of passion, ignorance, your happiness is all external. It's all the senses that are mentioned in this verse, contacting their objects. In the mode of goodness, your happiness is all internal. Your happiness in the mode of goodness is internal from your sense of balance and harmony and rightness, that you're doing the right thing. And so in the mode of goodness, you can feel much more satisfied without so much sense objects. But you're not going to feel entirely satisfied without sense objects in the mode of goodness, because it's still an egotistical, material mode of nature. When we're in touch with Krishna, we feel fully satisfied with him. Because we, the soul, the mode of goodness, your mind is satisfied. But in bhakti, your soul is satisfied. Because ultimately we're not our mind either. Even if the mind is satisfied, it's still not touching the soul. The soul is satisfied when it's in touch with the unlimited. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnamidajate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamedam Vasishate. When we are fully satisfied, then as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, we have no need to depend on any other living being. We don't depend then on sense objects. We don't depend on ego boosts. We don't depend on anyone or anything ever for our satisfaction, because we already have all of our satisfaction. Now, if we already have all of our satisfaction, then we can have genuine love, because then we're not trying to get anything from anybody. As long as we're trying to get something from somebody, we're not able to have genuine affection. In the mode of goodness, you're still dependent on your external circumstances in order to feel peaceful within. But in bhakti, you're not. You can feel peaceful within anywhere, in any circumstances. You're not dependent, as Krishna says, on auspicious or inauspicious things. He says that if one is in bhakti, they have no need to do anything in the world, nor do they have any need to give it up. And that's what we really want to come to. That's the original form, that's the spiritual form of passion. Is one is so full that one is overflowing and one is giving to others bigger, better, more, bigger, better, more, bigger, better, more love and giving, not bigger, better, more satisfaction for me. The spiritual world is not static like the material mode of goodness. The material mode of goodness is just balance and equanimity. But the spiritual world is dynamic and ever-expanding. Something like the material mode of passion. But it's ever expanding out of satisfaction and fullness, whereas in the mode of passion, one is trying to ever expand because the hole in one's heart is so deep. So we talked about what is the mode of goodness, how it entangles us, and how we as devotees can use that in Krishna service, and also how we can transcend it and take it back to its original form. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Yes.
So, is there sudha vajra? Is there passion that's transcendental?
Yes. Yes, there's definitely the transcendental form of all three modes. If you look at the Ladini Shakti, the Chit Shakti, and the Sat Shakti, those are the original forms of the three modes of nature.
How does the Lord affect the modes? Is that this is body is made of more passionate.
You know, that's an interesting question, because Lord Brahma, being the highest demigod, must have a body that's practically completely in the mode of goodness. I mean, even the semi-demigods, like the Gandharvas and the Apsaras and the Kinnaras, have bodies that are much more in the mode of goodness than ours. And then you go up to like Indra and Chandra and Vayu, their bodies are in the mode of goodness. And you go above them to the Prajapatis, and the four Kumaras, and they have bodies very much in goodness. And the top body in the whole material universe is Lord Brahma, which is almost completely in goodness. But he's in charge of the mode of passion, because no material body is going to be in pure goodness. Now, it's interesting. I mean, Lord Brahma is the chief brahmana in the universe. You don't hear about Lord Brahma engaging in battles, right? Is there ever any instance of Lord Brahma battling the demons? Ever? No, because he's a brahmana. He's not a kshatriya. The same with, you know, the four Kumaras and Pipalayana Muni, and they're never out there in the big universal battles. That's Indra, the chief kshatriya in the universe. But still, it's still a material body, which means there's some amounts of passion, ignorance in that form. I'm not sure if that answers your question. Anybody else? I've never been able to understand Lord Shiva. Really, I find him much more difficult to understand than Krishna. Lord Shiva is Vishnu, who enjoys the material energy. So he's equal to Vishnu. He is Vishnu, but he's Vishnu who enjoys the material energy, so he's not Vishnu. He's milk with some lemon juice in it. Turns into yogurt or paneer. But he's very mysterious. I know Ravindra Sruprabhu talked about how the Western religions have an idea of two gods, God and Satan. And he says in the Vedic religion, Lord Shiva is like Satan. He's in charge of the demons, he's in charge of the ghosts and hobgoblins, he has a trident. But he himself is not evil. He's in charge of destruction, all the things that they attribute to Satan, disease, calamity, pain, suffering. But he's the greatest Vaishnava. He's not himself evil. He's not a competitor with the Lord. But he does fight with the Lord sometimes. You know, he engages in the wars, and he'll often take the side of the demons. And he's fighting against Krishna or Vishnu, which is... Of course, sometimes he also helps the demigods, like that. Tripurari, when Lord Shiva destroyed the Tripura flying cities of the demons. But Lord Shiva is very mysterious. I mean, there's, you know, expansions of Lord Shiva in the material universes, and then he also has his abode, according to Sanatana Goswami Brihad Bhagavatamsa. He has his abode beyond the Brahma Jyoti. Goloka Namani Chitam Chitay Chitasya Devi Mahesha Haridam Ashutay Shutayshu. So he has his, you have Haridam and you have Maheshnam and you have Devinam. And when Gopakumar saw Lord Shiva, he said, who is this personality who's existing beyond liberation but appears like a great hedonist? I'm sure he'd be a very nice person to meet. If I ever meet him, I'll tell you more about him. I know some devotees who've met Lord Shiva. Any other questions? Yes? The mature world what?
Just in for power.
Yes, yes. Yes, yes, there's that paint, that BBT painting of the modes as puppeteers.
Anybody?
Yes? Is that just a comment?
I'm Then how Krishna, through the Bhagavad Gita, helps us to the conditions of it come out of the world.
Yes. Yes. It's one of the most wonderful things about our philosophy. You know, I don't know any other religious philosophy that describes how material nature works. Anything else?
You mentioned that in bhakti, the soul is satisfied.
Yes.
And in the world of what is the mind is satisfied.
Yes.
Is there anything that can be satisfied in the world of passion?
Can you be satisfied in the mode of passion? The senses can be temporarily satisfied in the mode of passion. So in the mode of passion, you know, the person eats the pizza, they have sexual intercourse, they buy the beautiful home, they buy the beautiful car. There's a moment of satisfaction. You know, if you eat a good meal, there is some time when you feel satisfied. Now, you don't feel completely, totally, absolutely satisfied. And you may not feel internally, mentally satisfied. You felt, you mean, yes, I got the car of my dreams. You know, and you have some feeling of satisfaction. So there's that kind of satisfaction in the mode of passion. And people in the mode of passion think that that's as good as it gets. They think you really can't achieve anything beyond that. Now, as I said, because people in the mode of passion are doing generally dharma, and dharma generates, it tends to foster sattva guna. So by doing dharma for material reasons, they may kind of accidentally taste sattva guna without intending to. That's the idea. That's kind of Krishna's idea. That he says to conditioned souls and human body, all right, you want to enjoy your senses and your ego in the world. Do it through dharma. Krishna at least wants human beings to be out of the mode of ignorance and in the mode of passion. Why would Krishna want human beings to be at least in the mode of passion? Because it will happen. You're going around doing dharma to get your sense gratification, and you'll sometimes, that dharma will give you a feeling of inner satisfaction. And you'll say, wow, that was nice. I mean, most ordinary people who are primarily in the mode of passion have that experience. They help somebody, and they do something good, and they feel, wow, that feels good inside. Yes? That's sattva. And then if a person starts to say, wow, that inside feeling of feeling good is so much better than the happiness I'm getting from the ice cream and the sex and the money. Maybe I should just go for the feeling good inside. Then when you go for the feeling good inside, once you stabilize the mind, you may have realization of God in the soul. So the sense satisfaction in the mode of passion is really just an inducement for the conditioned soul to do dharma. We're not really, Krishna is not so concerned about whether or not a conditioned soul gets sense satisfaction, ego satisfaction, because that doesn't have anything to do with the soul anyway. It's like most parents are not going to be that concerned whether or not their child kills the demons in the computer game or not. They're not going to save their kids. So, did you kill all the demons? Unless the parents are also into video games. They're not going to be concerned about that. So Krishna has very little concern over to what extent we satisfy our senses and our ego in this world, because it's not us. It's meaningless. You know, your children playing with toys. The parents don't usually ask the children, so how did your toys do? Did your toy princess get married to the toy prince? I mean, adults are not... Are you all understanding what I'm saying? That's not of interest to the adults. They understand the children have to play with toys. But what is of interest to Krishna is to get us to do dharma. That interests him. Because he knows if we do dharma, we'll experience some of sattva guna, and if we experience some of sattva guna, we may come to unlimited joy. But how is he going to get us to do dharma? We don't want to do dharma. By convincing us that you're going to get much better, much more sustained, much more pleasurable sense and ego happiness if you do dharma than if you do adharma. You want to enjoy your senses? You want to enjoy your ego? Do it through dharma. And most religions teach exactly that. Am I correct? You want to enjoy your senses, you want to enjoy your ego, do it through dharma instead of adharma. That's what this all, I mean, not all, but pretty much all the schools in the world, that's what they're teaching. You want to be a success in life, you want to have money, you want to have fame, you want to attract a good romantic partner, you want to have a good job that you enjoy, do it through dharma rather than adharma. Correct? So the governments, the schools, the parents, the religious leaders generally are pushing in that direction. Why? Why does Krishna want that? Because he wants people to have a chance at tasting real happiness. So yes, there's some happiness in the mode of passion, but it's just there as an inducement to do dharma. That's all. It really has no meaning. On an ultimate platform, there's no meaning to it at all. It's not really happiness. It's not really satisfaction. But it's a lot more happiness and satisfaction than someone gets in the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance says there's nothing that looks like satisfaction at all or happiness at all, just nothing. Does that answer your question? Anybody else? Anything else? Yes, that is the ultimate. Ashanta. Yes, that those people are all not peaceful. Even in the mode of goodness, you're not going to be peaceful. Even if you go to the Brahman, which is the ultimate position of peace, that is the Brahman. The Brahman is peace. In one sense, we're not still going to be peaceful because we want variety in relationships and activity. So, yeah, one cannot find ultimate satisfaction except through a loving relationship with the Lord. Was there someone else? I thought I saw somebody else. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. Thank you. Thank you.